Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
I talked to the FBI down there, and you know, they said if something bad happened to him, if he had cash on him and somebody met him and you know wanted to steal his cash and they killed him, they could take him out and dump him in the desert. But somebody knows something. Somebody has to know something, because Mark was real well connected to people and very well liked.
And our goal is to locate Mark. Robin is Mark's last surviving relative. He had a sibling that passed away early. Then he had his parents have since passed, and now Robin is left to wonder where Mark went. And our goal is to provide as many answers as possible to help locate Mark and provide resolution. It's been about 2 years and 2 months since his disappearance, and we're seeking out help and assistance from the general public.
Back in September of 2016, 53-year-old Mark Shearer was living alone with his cat in Phoenix, Arizona. His sister Robin and some of Mark's friends began to notice that they hadn't heard from him recently. They attempted to contact him, but he wasn't returning their phone calls. That's when they started contacting each other to see if anyone else had heard from him, but no one had. They went out to his house, and a few things seemed out of place. His porch light was left on, which was unlike him, and his mail had been piling up. Worried that he could be inside and possibly had a medical emergency, they contacted the local police to come out and do a welfare check. They went inside, but there was no sign of Mark. The police took a missing persons report, and this is when the police realized that Mark's motorcycle had been found abandoned several miles away in the days before he had been reported missing. That was just the beginning of this very bizarre mystery. Over 2 years have passed, and they still have no clue what happened to Mark. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 155 of The Vanished, Mark Shearer's story. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. Back in October of last year, I traveled to Phoenix to attend their annual Missing Persons Day event. While I was there, I had the pleasure of meeting Mark's sister, Robin, and also the detective who was investigating his disappearance. Mark's case hasn't gotten a whole lot of media attention, so Robin was hopeful that we could help spread awareness about his disappearance. To understand what may have happened to Mark, we have to go back. Robin told us a bit about her brother.
He was an active little kid. I mean, he was involved in sports from early on and played football in high school, and we would go skiing. We grew up in Ohio, so we spent a lot of time skiing, and he just loved that. So when he went up to NAU, he continued to ski and be involved in motorcycles. He really loved stuff that had to do with magic tricks. He was really into that, and had paper route when he was growing up. You know, your typical kid stuff. He and my dad were very close from the get-go. They were involved in all sorts of things. Like, I think it was called the Weeblos. It's kind of like a Cub Scout thing. And they did volunteer work. You know, he and my dad did a lot of work with Parents Without Partners once he and my mom got divorced. They did work through the church and help feed homeless on the holidays when we couldn't get together. But, you know, he was just always there. He was just very charismatic, very caring. You know, when you'd talk to him and he would smile, he would get this twinkle in his eye. Just like he was just so happy to be talking, to get to know a person. You don't see that very often. I'm sorry. But he's my younger brother, and we both lived here in Phoenix. My husband and I actually moved back out here from Ohio in 2013 to be with him because my dad had died and he and my dad had lived together. He was taking care of my dad. They were really close. And they lived together in a house out here in Phoenix. My brother was my only remaining sibling left. We also had a sister who died, but she died 23 years ago. And none of us had any kids, so we were very, 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 very close. I mean, our whole family growing up, we always did everything together, and Mark was the baby. He was the only boy, and he was probably a little on the spoiled side, but I think we all were. You know, we just spent every holiday together. When my husband and I moved out here, Mark came over almost every Sunday and had dinner with us.
As I mentioned, at the time of his disappearance, Mark was living alone. He was single, and Robin explained that over the years, Mark had been in several serious relationships, but none of them ever ended up working out.
He had a couple of close relationships where we thought he was going to get married and was engaged a couple times, but my sister and I, we didn't get married till we were older, so we still had hope for him, though. But even the two women that he was going to marry and they broke off, they still stayed really good close friends. I don't know of one person that Mark didn't like. I cannot tell you one person he ever said anything bad about or anybody that he ever had bad feelings towards.
One thing that we've seen in cases when someone goes missing and they live alone is that there's often a delay in reporting because no one immediately notices that they're gone. This is what happened with Mark. And in a case like this, the exact timeline can be murky. As adults, we often get busy, and a friend not answering the phone isn't an immediate cause for concern. But as time goes on and there's no response, this is when the worry starts to grow. This is exactly what happened in Mark's case.
So what happened was he went missing the end of September of 2016. We haven't had any luck in finding him since through massive efforts of the police and the Missing Persons Bureau and myself and his friends. Mark was one of those people that had friends from, you know, the time he was in school and could talk. He had friends that are still his friends today. They were people that came and still come with me to the Missing in Arizona event every year and helped. You know, during the summer when it was hot and put out flyers in the park, they think that he was last in. We've gotten no response. So he was, you know, very loved. I called the police after a week that we hadn't heard anything from him and made repeated calls. And they did a well person check on his house because we thought, well, maybe he, you know, he's 53. I mean, maybe he had a heart attack in his house or something. And you know, he couldn't reach us, but no, there was no sign of him. His house was locked up. There were groceries on the counter. His cat was inside, and she had been fed, but not for a couple days. Since we didn't have any children, our pets were our children, basically.
When they reported Mark missing, the police realized that they had found his motorcycle abandoned just days earlier.
They found his motorcycle. He had a custom Harley Davidson motorcycle, 2009. pristine condition. They had found his motorcycle abandoned on the side of an older couple's house about 3 or 4 miles from his home. And it had been there apparently for 2 or 3 days, laying in their side yard, and nobody came to claim it. And they just thought that somebody would come back and get it. And finally, when nobody did, they called the police. So when the police came out to do the well person check, the officer told me, well, we found his motorcycle. And I said, well, that can't be, because Mark would never leave his motorcycle. That thing was, like I said, in pristine condition every second. He even posted it on his Facebook page. He was really proud of that thing. They found it with the keys in it, you know, with gas, with the keys in it, pristine condition, laying in somebody's yard. So that right there, to me, was very suspicious. I asked the officers, I said, well, why aren't you investigating this as a homicide or something? Because Mark just wouldn't do this. You know, his house was paid up. His friends were, he was in touch with his friends up until, you know, a week before his disappearance.
According to Robin, the police seemed to initially think that Mark would return, that maybe he had just gone on vacation and forgot to tell someone.
So they referred us to the missing persons division, who came out and took a report, and they pretty much told us, well, we don't really go looking for adults unless they have a, you know, they're mentally incapacitated or it's a child. And I said, okay, well, I understand that, but this is not your normal. Mark just wouldn't take up and get up and leave and go not tell his family and friends. He just wasn't that kind of person. He was always connected. He was the person who always followed up and stayed in touch. And, you know, I'm not saying that he was Mr. Reliable or anything or Mr. Prompt, but he was always staying in touch with people, paid his bills. You know, he had a home. He took care of my dad. We didn't get much response from the police. I said, well, what can we do? What can we do? And they said, well, you can post flyers. And we put him in the missing person database. We went door to door in the subdivision where his bike was found. For maybe 2 or 3 months, every single weekend, there was a core group of us, my friends, my husband, my brother's friends, and we would get together every weekend and go through the park and through the neighborhoods and post flyers of his disappearance. I started a website, you know, was in constant contact with the police. I gave him names and numbers off of every single computer device my brother had, people, names, and contacts of people that we didn't already know about, which there were some that were close friends, I guess, that Mark had been in contact with, that myself and his closest friends didn't even know who these people were. And, you know, just the longer it went on, the harder it got, because we felt like something wasn't right about this. It just wasn't his behavior to just take up and leave. And they said, well, you know, he could have gone on vacation. And I say, first of all, he had house payment, and he was paying his house payment every month and his bills. He wasn't behind in anything. So how do you explain that he, you know, was in contact with us, coming over to our house almost every week, seeing his friends every week, and then all of a sudden he just disappears?
We also spoke to Mark's friend Tom for this episode. Tom told us how he knew Mark.
Yeah, I've known Mark since we were sophomores in high school. I'm 54 now, so yeah, I knew him for about, close to 40 years. Mark was a very outgoing, curious guy, always asking questions, very friendly. He used to like to ride a motorcycle, and he used to ride the Japanese bikes, but then later in his life, he got that Harley. He graduated from NAU, had several different jobs, worked in the restaurant business, was a manager at Montgomery Ward's, worked for a hospital company, worked for the Arizona Rattlers as a sales rep. The last 5 years before he went missing, and before his dad passed away, he was his dad's caretaker, took real good care of his dad before he passed away. Just a really good guy. Kind of strange how he just disappeared.
When trying to establish a timeline in Mark's case, his friend Tom may be the last known person to see him alive. He spoke about the last time he saw Mark on September 27th, 2016, around 6:30 p.m.
Well, the last time I saw Mark, I had borrowed some bolt cutters from him. And then he said, hey, make sure I get these back. And I said, no problem. And about a half hour later, that was about 6:30 in the evening. And then I got kind of like a pocket dial and I heard some noise. I figured out he accidentally hit his button and he's riding his bike somewhere. I think Mark would put his phone in his pocket and he'd get on his motorcycle and he probably accidentally called me. And all I heard was this thumping noise, thump, 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 thump. And that was at about 7 o'clock on September 27th, which I think means that I might've been one of the last ones to speak to him before his bike. I think whatever happened to him happened before his bike was left at that location. And then it wasn't odd for me not to hear from Mark for a couple weeks, a month at a time. His other friend, Jeff Daggett, let me know, hey, I haven't heard from Mark in over a week. So got concerned, kind of went over to the house. His porch light was on, which he never leaves on. He's real money miser with electricity. And the trunk of his car was propped open, not all the way open, but it wasn't locked. It wasn't secure. And that was kind of strange. And so I went over to his sister and said, hey, I haven't heard. And then I texted him and called him and I didn't get any response. So I went to his sister's house and said, hey, I think something's wrong with Mark. You know, I think so. Then we called the police and we did a wellness check. Come to find out, checking his mail, that his bike had been left over at 21st and Larkspur probably about 3 days after I saw him. It was just left there. And that was not like Mark. Mark would never leave. And the keys were in the ignition, too. So the bike was parked up on the sidewalk at 21st and Larkspur, which is about 3 miles from his house, or maybe even four. Almost like somebody put it there. And then we found out, so I found out by checking his mail that, yeah, the police had come by and were trying to let him know that they had impounded his motorcycle. So that's kind of what alerted us to him being gone and that something suspicious happened.
Starting a healthy routine and sticking to it are two very different things. We all skimp on that full night of sleep, skip a workout or two, or brush our teeth with a tired old toothbrush. We're not perfect, but we can do better, and Quip is the better electric toothbrush that can help. Quip electric toothbrushes have sensitive sonic vibrations for an effective clean that's gentle on your sensitive gums. Many people brush too hard, and some electric toothbrushes are too abrasive. One thing that I love about Quip is that their brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. It's so easy to get busy and forget. This is a friendly reminder when it's time for a refresh and to stay committed to your oral health. I swear, since I switched to Quip, my teeth just feel cleaner. That's why I love Quip, and why over 1 million happy, healthy mouths do too. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/vanished right now, you can get your first refill pack free. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/vanished. I love the incredible feeling of 5-star hotel sheets, but it shouldn't be so difficult and expensive to get sheets like that at home. Brooklinen works directly with their manufacturers and passes the savings on to you, making luxury bedding without the luxury prices, finally. You can get 5-star hotel quality sheets without breaking the bank. My Brooklinen sheets don't just feel amazing, but they look great too. One of my favorite things is that you can mix and match over 20 colors and patterns. I like that I could pick out a combination of solids and stripes. They also make towels, robes, and sleep masks so you can add a splash of luxury to your daily routine going into 2019. My Brooklinen sheets are the best, most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on. Now it's time for your upgrade. Brooklinen is giving an exclusive offer just for my listeners. Get $20 off and free shipping when you use my promo code MIA at brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is so confident in their product that all of their sheets, comforters, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use promo code MIA at brooklinen.com. That's BROOKLINEN.com, promo code MIA. Brooklinen, these really are the best sheets ever. Another important thing to note on Mark's timeline is that his motorcycle had been reported to the police on September 30th, and the people who reported it said it had been there for about 3 days. If that estimate is accurate, and Tom had seen him on the 27th, and the bike was recovered on the 30th, it's possible that Mark went missing on the 27th after Tom had dropped off the bolt cutters. The area where his motorcycle was left could be some kind of clue, or could have been left there to throw everyone off the trail. If that location is an important piece of the puzzle, no one has figured out exactly where it fits. The motorcycle didn't really yield any clues either.
They found a receipt on the motorcycle that he'd gone to the pet shop to get some crickets because he had a pet lizard. I checked some records, and he had gotten gas a couple days before, $4 worth, and he probably just filled up his motorcycle tank. I'm guessing he went and got crickets earlier in that day. He was planning on feeding his lizard, and something happened that I believe something happened the evening of the 27th or the 28th, and then his bike got moved.
One thing that Tom thought was strange was when the police came out to do a well check on Mark. There was food left out for the cat, but something else wasn't right.
Another thing was the cat door was locked, and I don't think Mark ever locked the cat door because he let his cat come and go. So it's almost like whatever foul play happened, that they came back to the house.
Tom had mentioned one of Mark's other friends, Jeff. We also spoke to him for this episode. Jeff spoke about how he knew Mark.
Mark and I went to Cortez High. Mark, myself, and Tom all went to Cortez High. We're all pretty much the same age. Mark knew Tom a lot better than I did because they were a year younger than me. And in high school, that seemed like an eternity.
Jeff had moved out of the area for several years, but he told us how he reconnected with Mark later in life.
Well, when I was living in El Paso for a little while, so we'll have to go back to 2009. My stepdad died, and my mom was a mess. So I was in El Paso for 6 years. So it was time for me to come back. I came back and hooked up with Mark through Facebook, and we went to a class reunion. So it was kind of what they call mixers, where, you know, different years of people showed up, and that's where I reconnected with Mark. And that's when he was caring for his dad. And I think right at that time, Mark's house caught on fire. They were moving from place to place, hotels, other houses. They ended up on a house on like 7th Street in Thunderbird. Mark's dad suffered a brutal injury. The garage door hit him in the head. And I just happened to be over there. I stopped over there, and he was on the ground. Somebody had just called 911. And it really hurt the guy bad. After that, I think that's when his dad started, you know, getting really sick. And I guess at that point, you know, he had to put him in hospice or something like that, and that's where he passed away.
After Jeff and Mark reconnected several years ago, they kept in contact on a regular basis. While Tom and Robin were becoming concerned about Mark around the time of his disappearance, Jeff was also beginning to worry.
The last time I remember talking to Mark was, I think it was his birthday, which was 9/11. I didn't get a hold of him. I think I left a voicemail. I decided to go over to his house. I went to his house in the daytime, and Mark was kind of a cheap guy. When I got there, his porch light was on. It was like 2 p.m. So I'm like, okay, that's kind of peculiar. Even if Mark went on vacation, he wouldn't turn his porch light on, which he didn't go on, you know, a lot of vacations. But so I kind of, you know, rang the doorbell, knocked on the garage door, and I got nothing. So I went kind of back, swing around the driveway where his car was, and his trunk was open. It was just, you know, cracked open a little bit. That definitely wasn't Mark. So I said, well, let me check the mailbox. The mailbox seemed to be full. And I mean, I didn't go into looking at dates or anything. At that point, I didn't think that was important. But I knew there was mail in there, a lot of mail. Tom's the mailman, so I don't even know if he looked at the postmark dates. That would give us a better idea of maybe how long he hadn't gotten his mail. So I went back to the door, and I noticed his cat jumped in the window. And Mark would never leave his cat unattended. So at that point, I went and I think I called Tom and left Robin a message. But Tom and I were kind of working on it, and Tom called and got the police department to do a welfare check. I guess they went through the back and, you know, opened the back door, and all they could say is, you know, Mark wasn't in there. They couldn't go in there and like search the place. They went in there and looked for Mark. He wasn't there.
Jeff mentioned that when they went to Mark's home, it was really a mess. Mark wasn't known for having an extremely spotless home, but this wasn't like him either. It did concern Jeff, and he's wondered if Mark had left it a mess or if someone else had been rifling through Mark's belongings. Mark had also mentioned something kind of strange before he disappeared. Something about having a large amount of money inside his home. Could someone have known or thought that Mark had a large amount of money inside his house?
Tom mentioned something about Mark telling him he misplaced $10,000 in the house. I'm like, that's not a normal guy. He didn't say that to me. How does anybody misplace that much money? So, but then Tom never heard the end of it. So he figured, well, he must have found whatever he was looking for. And we didn't go in there looking for that. You know, the day we went to the house trying to figure out what happened to Mark, we kind of had a plan. I said, Tom, you look for titles and things, you know, paperwork. And I'm going to look for keys and wallets and phones. And, you know, if I run over something that's important, I'll bring it up. And the house was in a disarray. It looked like a hoarder's house. It looked like he had every piece of laundry in the living room on the couches, the love seats, anything that he could put his laundry on. That, and I don't remember Mark ever being extra tidy or neat, but I don't know if somebody was tossing his stuff and going through it. You never know. Never know.
After hearing about this $10,000 from Jeff, I wondered if Tom had any more information about this money.
Mark had conversations with me 6 months prior saying, hey, I had $10,000 in an envelope and I lost it. And he couldn't remember where he put it. And then he says, I've looked every once in a while when I see him, I'd say, hey, did you find that money? And he'd say, no, I didn't.
We can't be certain that this money was inside Mark's home when he disappeared, or if it ever truly existed. But it's possible that Mark may have mentioned this to more people than just Tom, or that someone could have overheard him talking about the money. Jeff mentioned that when they went inside Mark's house after his disappearance, that it was messier than expected, which made them wonder if someone could have gone through, tossing his things to look for something. If that were the case, could they have been looking for that $10,000? Jeff was immediately concerned that Mark had left his cat, and the abandoned motorcycle was a huge red flag for him as well.
Mark would never leave his cat. And I think when we went in there at the time, we didn't know where his motorcycle was. And then, you know, right shortly after, his motorcycle was found with the keys in it, like a couple miles down the road. He would never leave his motorcycle, keys or no keys. He would call. He had insurance. So if he had a flat tire, he ran out of gas, he'd call his insurance. And I'm sure he had some kind of roadside assistance. So we kind of knew at that point there was something really wrong. No sign of him. Couldn't get to him through his cell phone. You know, if he was leaving, he would call somebody and say, hey, you want to watch my cat? Come over and feed my cat? I mean, there's a whole lot of things that indicated foul play. And it wasn't based on the cat. I mean, it was, you know, his trunk was open on his car. All right. So whoever tried to take his car or attempted to take his car, probably couldn't, because Mark had this bad habit of letting the battery run out. So if somebody tried to start the car, they wouldn't have gotten anywhere. And unless they were a mechanic, they wouldn't have been able to figure it out. That's the biggest thing we thought was foul play. It was a motorcycle with the keys in it.
From the very beginning, Robin has felt as though the motorcycle being left several miles away was a big clue. She just can't seem to figure out where this clue fits in the overall puzzle of Mark's disappearance. She pushed to have the police do some testing on the bike.
I finally convinced the police to take the bike and have it tested forensically because they were going to sell it as an abandoned vehicle, which concerned me because I said to the detective, if it was the last place that Mark was, or if somebody had done something to him and then come back and dumped the bike, there might be some evidence on it. I watched too many police shows, and there might be some evidence on the bike that you could use. And what they said they found was nothing but Mark's prints and some receipts in his saddlebags of some purchases he had made at a PetSmart store. So every day I just think, what is it that I can do to try to continue to try to find him or find out what happened to him? We called all the hospitals, all the morgues, all the jails, and anything that we were told to do that we could possibly do, we did and have been continued to do. I go every year to the Missing in Arizona event with his friends, and we talk to the detective, and once a week I try to follow up with the detective.
Even though the testing on the motorcycle was a dead end, and there wasn't anything inside the compartments that was suspicious, that doesn't mean that there hadn't been something there that someone could have wanted.
If he had, containers locked on the motorcycle, it's possible they could have stayed in there. But I don't know. If you have a vehicle impounded, though, I don't trust impound people as far as you can throw them. I think whatever was of value, I don't know if it was gone before or even the motorcycle was planted. That's what I'm guessing. The motorcycle was planted. And whatever valuables Mark had on his person went along with that person that did that, or person.
Robin also mentioned something interesting about the last call on Mark's phone.
Now, the detective told me that the last person that Mark talked to died, the number that Mark talked to right before he went missing, that number was used by somebody. The owner of the phone had died in May prior to Mark going missing in September. I don't know what the detective found out. The detective said that they traced back that number, and the person who owned that number had died in May of 2016. This is what's very strange. And I said, well, who owns the phone? Because is it still in working order? And he said they went back and talked to the man's son, who hasn't given them a lot of information, and they're trying to track down the wife of the man that died that owned the phone. He didn't give me a name. He said in some cases he can't give out that information, which I said, it's fine. It's not like I'm going to go to their house anyway, but I would never do that. It's strange to me that if he had a conversation on this phone number, and I'm sure the officers are doing their best to investigate it, but why is that number still being used? And who had that conversation with Mark if it wasn't the man that owned the phone?
There was one lead that had come in that could be promising, but also could be nothing at all.
At one conversation, they told me that when they canvassed the park that was next to the subdivision where his bike was left, that somebody in the park, which there are a lot of homeless people out here in the parks, said that they heard somebody walking through the park mumbling about a motorcycle. Maybe they did. When we started putting out flyers, we never ran across anybody, and there weren't any, to my knowledge, I don't know that they got any calls or leads off of all those flyers that we put out. But my friends and I, we even went down in a ravine where the homeless people stay. The area, the park that this guy supposedly said they heard someone muttering and stumbling about, talking about a motorcycle. First of all, if Mark was, if he'd gone into some sort of a psychotic break, which, we knew was also a possibility, and we tracked down the hospitals and the jails and everything. So somebody would have seen his face on these flyers out there. We just know he's not out there stumbling around somewhere.
We're all looking for a fresh start this time of year. And for most of us, our New Year's resolutions are about being healthier. But resolutions are hard. So hard that 80% of us fail at sticking to our resolutions each year. There's no quick fix when it comes to better health. It's all about starting good daily habits and actually sticking to them. Enter Ritual, the obsessively researched vitamin for women. Ritual's essentials have the nutrients that most of us don't get enough of from our diets, all in their purest, cleanest forms. No shady additives or ingredients that actually do more harm to your body than good. 2 easy-to-take capsules provide 9 nutrients you need to build a stronger foundation for better health. For obsessive label readers, all of Ritual's vegan-friendly, sugar-free, non-GMO, gluten-free, and allergen-free ingredients and their sources are 100% out there for the whole world to see. Better health doesn't happen overnight. Start your year with Essential for Women, a small step that helps create a healthy foundation for 2019 and beyond. Visit ritual.com/vanish to start your ritual today. That's ritual.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older 2 kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. How much do we ever know about a person? Do you show one side of yourself to your family and another to your friends? While I was researching Mark's case, I learned that he had used drugs on and off, and that this was not something that he had confided in his sister about. Here's Tom speaking about that.
You know, Mark and I were really close, you know, in the high school, college years, and after. We went and took the postal exam together, and then I ended up getting on with the post office, and I've been there for 34 years. And then he opted to go to college and went up to NAU. But there towards, you know, when he was taking care of his dad and he wasn't working, he had a lot of idle time. So he did start doing a little bit of drugs. And I didn't hang around with him as much because I didn't like some of the company he was hanging around with. I just didn't like that, you know, that atmosphere. But when he wasn't, he would clean up. He would dabble in it and then he'd clean up. And then when he cleaned up, he'd call me and we'd hang out. But when he kind of went into that world or in that realm, he kind of knew that I didn't want to hang around, so he'd be a little distant from me at those times.
Robin spoke about what she knew in regards to Mark's drug use.
And I knew he might have smoked some marijuana, but that was about it. And apparently, you know, if he was doing anything beyond that, we didn't really know about it.
Jeff also wasn't aware of the extent of Mark's drug use until after he disappeared.
He was obviously doing a lot more drugs than I was aware of. From what I knew, it was marijuana and meth and a little bit of coke. But I guess during the end, when Tom and I went to his house, we found a lot of what appeared to be meth in pipes.
Mark really struggled with the death of his father, as the two were very close. We can't be certain, but it is possible that Mark turned to drugs to help cope with the loss of his father. Robin spoke about how she went to grief counseling and tried to get Mark to go too.
He and my dad were best friends, and they were connected from the soul. I went and got some grief counseling. We were just a real close family. I encouraged Mark, but I think it was tough for him to talk about his feelings. I don't know that he ever got anything for that. I mean, maybe that's why he smoked pot every now and then or something. He talked to me about it a little bit after, you know, when we got back here, and he came over and we'd talk about it. And I said, you know, how are you doing since Dad died? And you could just see his whole face change, you know, once I brought it up, because just trying to get him to open up about it a little bit. He said, yeah, he said, I just can't believe that they're all gone, that they left us here. And I said, yeah, Mark, I said, but at least, you know, we have each other. He said, yeah. He said, you know, Dad would be glad about that. And I said, yeah, we got to be happy that they're all up there together, you know. And we'll be up there someday soon, but hopefully not too soon. You know, I said, but the main thing is that we just have to stick together and, you know, we can do that. We bought house. Our houses were 5 miles apart from each other.
Jeff also mentioned that Mark had a significant surgery several years back, and he's wondered if the downtime he had after that surgery was when he could have started using drugs.
When I first came back to Phoenix, he was having a hip surgery. I don't remember exactly why, but it took him a while to be able to just get himself into therapy so he could move around, and to even ride a motorcycle. That wasn't even in a thought, you know, like 2010, 2011. He was trying to do therapy on his hip. Maybe that's where he started getting into the meth with all this free time. I actually took him when he picked the motorcycle up when he bought it. I mean, he had he was like a little kid in the candy store. He got his motorcycle. And of course, it's paid for. So, you know, at the time he had money, and I don't know exactly. I guess he was investing in real estate. So he was using that money to buy the motorcycle.
Since Mark disappeared, his friend Tom has spent a lot of time going over the possibilities in his mind.
Mark, he was dabbling in some drugs there towards the end, so he may have come across some bad company or something. You know, I don't know. Whatever happened, I don't know. I could speculate. You know, a lot of things crossed my mind. I didn't know if maybe a jealous boyfriend or something, because he did like, you know, he wasn't married, but he still liked to date and meet girls and everything. So I don't know. I thought maybe that or something involving drugs is where I think the foul play happened. And I have no idea.
One theory that Jeff has wondered about was if theft could have been the motive, because missing along with Mark were his wallet and cell phone.
I mean, if his wallet's gone, and he's gone, and his phone's gone, you know, I even tried to access his, I think he had a Cricket phone. And I tried to use every password in the world to try to get his voicemails, but no luck.
Mark's phone and credit cards have not been used since he disappeared, but Robin mentioned that he was known to use cash.
His passport was here, and now I don't know if he had money on. That's the thing. I think he might have had cash on him, because apparently he liked to use cash more than credit. You know, none of his credit cards were used after he went missing. His wallet, none of his personal identity, to my knowledge, had been used, nor his phone.
One thing that Robin mentioned was the possibility that Mark could have gone into Mexico and that something could have happened to him there. She knows of one other time that he had gone to Mexico in the past, so it isn't completely out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, he could have, you know, met some girl at a bar, and maybe she talked him into going to Mexico, and he could do some impulsive things sometimes, so that's definitely a possibility. Yeah, because that's a bad, bad place to go, isn't it? You know, I hear horror stories, because since we're in Phoenix, I mean, we used to go years ago, used to go down to Rocky Point, and that was a big party spot. And I had friends that go down there to get medication and go down for dental work, cross the border in Yuma. So, you know, it's like, what, a 4-hour drive, I think. If he was involved in any type of drug thing or whatever, then too, a lot of that's coming up from Mexico. I mean, he always carried a lot of cash on him. Because if he was, you know, out and showed that to the wrong person. And
in any case of a missing adult, there's always a chance that they could have walked away. And initially, the police told Robin that was what they thought had happened.
At first, they kept insisting that Mark was still alive. And when I gave him Mark's hairbrush and stuff to get the DNA, they came to my work, my office one day, and he and his boss, Detective Jensen, and his boss came to my office one day, and he said, "We know he's still alive." And I said, "Well, I just, you know, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. I just, with all my heart and soul, I hope that you're right. And yet, we know, you know, when you talk to Tom and Jeff, that Mark wouldn't do that."
Jeff also agreed with Robin. He doesn't believe Mark would have just walked away either.
The police, their take on it was, "Oh, this happens a lot. People just disappear. They want to be gone." And like, he almost like had his house paid off. He owned his car. He owned his motorcycle. He had his cat. He had way too much going for him to just walk away. You know, if somebody's alive, they're not going to bail out on everything they've worked for their entire life. "Well, I'm just going to go for a couple of years and then I'll just pop back in." I'm sure that happens, but I'm sure it's very rare, extremely rare in these circumstances.
While speaking with Robin and Mark's friends, one name kept coming up over and over. Whatever drug activity that Mark was involved with, he seemed to keep that separate from his relationships with Robin and his longtime friends Tom and Jeff. The one name that kept coming up was a guy named Lance. Here's Robin speaking about what she's learned about Lance.
Apparently there were several people. I just met with the detective last weekend at the Missing in Arizona event, and he said that they've been going back through the records, Mark's phone records, and trying to track down the people, the last 10 people that he contacted the most that weren't in his family and friends circle, people that we didn't know about. And apparently these people are giving information about Mark that is either not based in any fact, or they're changing their stories after they've been contacted a couple times. And this one individual in particular who Mark was last in contact with, his name was Lance, he changed his stories 3 different times. There's some things there that just don't line up. He plays a role, this Lance person, whoever he is. There's something there because he's the one that keeps changing his story when he was asked on a couple of different times by Mark's friends and then by the detective. And he also tried to tell the detective that he overdosed. There's something there that's not right. Mark had some auto parts delivered to his house for this guy. And they were still at his house when we came over here looking for him. You know, Tom, his best friend, had taken the parts and taken them to this guy because it scared me. I didn't know who he was.
Jeff also had his suspicions about Lance possibly knowing more. He worries that Mark's disappearance could have been a drug deal gone wrong.
Well, everything's kind of speculation, but I thought maybe a drug deal went bad where the motorcycle was left. It was close to Sunny Slope. And Mark had a really shady friend in Sunny Slope. His name was Lance, that he was doing drugs with, and he might have been doing more drugs than I was aware of, or more types of drugs. You know, this guy Lance actually mentioned something about HGB, or he said Mark might have, you know, OD'd on that. And he said that to Tom when Tom was over there visiting with another friend. You know, that kind of raised an eyebrow. Well, why would you say that? I mean, we're all speculating, obviously. Maybe that's what he was doing too. And I'm not trying to stick up for what he was saying, but he was really a shady guy. I'm not real sure how he met him. I don't know if there is anybody that knows that. I know Tom was introduced to him at one time or another. I don't know, maybe that was Mark's way of saying, "Hey, I don't trust this guy, you come with me." But he never said that. Mark had bought his car for like $2,000 and then resold it to him when he's able to, you know, get the money back. So there was a relationship there. He was like saying, "Well, I think I'm the last one to see him, and I don't have any reason to not believe him." Him and Mark had some kind of a thing going on with a piece of a car part from Amazon, and I was delivering for Amazon, and Mark was asking me the deliveries. How does that work? And I'm like, "Well, you order something and they deliver it to your house." And he's, you know, he wanted to know what happens if I'm not home. I said, "Well, normally they won't leave it there unless you put in the order, you know, throw it in the backyard." or something like that. So I found the Amazon box. And I'm like, well, this is probably the part Lance was looking for. So that was kind of a weird situation, too. You know, it wasn't like he was really concerned about Mark's well-being. It was more like, I want that part on the outskirts of the freeways. It's a lot of desert. On the outskirts, if he had got into a bad drug deal, you know, I can see him taking him into, you know, a desert area where there's coyotes or, you know, or big, whether you got those big things where people like fall down into, and you hear they were down there for weeks and broke their leg and, you know, or eating rattlesnakes, and I guess they're just mine shafts or something. I mean, you just never know.
Remember that $10,000 that Mark said he had but lost? Tom thinks that Lance also knew about that money.
He probably told people that he was close to. He told me, he probably told Jeff, and he also told, there's another guy that he spent a lot of time with, and I think the detectives only interviewed him once, was Lance. And I think he partied with Lance. Lance told us, I interviewed Lance, and he said, oh yeah, me and Mark kept the same hours. I took that to mean that, you know, they would stay up on meth at night. And he said, you know, Mark has a garden in my backyard. And he also said, I asked Lance specifically, I go, Lance, what do you think happened to Mark? And he goes, I think Mark died of an accidental overdose of GHB. And I said, well, why do you think that? He goes, because I was selling it to him. I think he might know more than he's told the police. An interesting thing, the police said they couldn't tell us where his cell phone was last, but the last cell tower was at 12th Street and Hatcher, the last ping from a cell tower. I don't know exactly what that means, but Lance lives at Central and Hatcher. So that kind of puts the cell phone, the last ping from the cell phone, close to where Lance lives. And Lance just said some suspicious things at first when we interviewed him. He said, oh yeah, I'll get my guys out in Sunny Slope and we'll find out what happened to Mark. And then about 6 months later, we interviewed him again and he goes, oh, we said we were going to pass out flyers in the area. And go, oh, that would be a waste of time. Mark didn't hang out in the Slope. He hung out in West Phoenix. And in other words, he was discouraging us from passing out flyers in the area, which I thought was odd because we know he hung out in the Sunny Slope area near Lance's house. He got the pet receipt. You know, he went to the pet shop at 19th and Peoria. You know, he could probably stop by the pet shop on his way to Lance's. But Lance claims he was out of town the entire month before Mark's disappearance. I can't verify that one way or another, but that's what he said.
Since Mark kept his circle separated, it's been difficult for Robin to make clear connections between people Mark had been communicating with and who could possibly be involved in his disappearance. One day, she was overworking in Mark's garage when some people she had never met approached her.
A guy and two women came over to his house when we were over here trying to clean out his garage, looking for computers and stuff. His name was Christian. The detective already has talked to him, Christian, and then two other women, and I can't remember their names or if I ever even got their names, but they looked like they had some drug use. The one lady even said she thought Mark was doing drugs, but, you know, I really don't know who this woman was. I'd never met her before. She looked like she was on drugs herself, so I'm not sure what the connection is.
Tom and Jeff have been going over all the different theories I can think of, but there's just never enough to pin down a really solid theory.
Everything that, you know, Tom and I were looking to, we've talked about, you know, a handful of scenarios that were, they could have been great, they couldn't have been, but we have nothing to go on. They're all like, what if? And that's detective work right there in a nutshell, pretty much. You go after a lead until it turns out to not be a lead.
As I mentioned, I had the chance to meet the detective who's investigating Mark's disappearance. Detective Christopher Jansen also spoke with us for this episode.
Mark resided in the area of 23rd Avenue and Union Hills. When he went missing, Mark's sister, Robin, didn't see or hear from him. Robin gradually became concerned about Mark's disappearance and the lack of contact she had with him in that past month. That she went to go check up on him. Well, after not being able to locate him, not being able to call him through the telephone, she initiated a missing persons report with us. And as we were looking into the report, we located Mark's motorcycle about 5.5 miles south of his address in the area of 21st Avenue in Larkspur. Now, we didn't gain any information by looking at Mark's motorcycle that was abandoned in that intersection. Well, not in the intersection, it was more abandoned near a house. So after speaking with Robin and then Mark's friends, I believe one of them you spoke with was Tom, learned a lot about Mark and learned that he had two sets of friends. He had his family and friends. So he had Robin and his two really close friends that reside here close to him. And then there was another group of friends that those two groups didn't know about each other. We did hear that Mark did have, at times he suffered from addiction. But our goal isn't, we set that aside, and our goal is to locate Mark because, as you know, Robin is Mark's last surviving relative. He had a sibling that passed away early, then he had both his parents has since passed, and now Robin is left to wonder where Mark went. And our goal is to provide as many answers as possible to help locate Mark and provide resolution and answers to Robin during this difficult time. It's been about 2 years and 2 months since his disappearance, and we're seeking out help and assistance from the general public. We've gone through Silent Witness, and we've also done social media platforms. We've also reached out to traditional media platforms to help us either jog someone's memory that may have had a contact with Mark or maybe had a friendship with Mark. And we also want to encourage people that, again, with Silent Witness, there is a potential monetary reward if information leads to his whereabouts. Also, you know, to hit on again is that some people go missing under their own accord, and they might have a disagreement or disconnect with the friends or family, and they just leave. And our goal is to find Mark in any physical state possible. Again, Robin is the sole survivor of their family, and she deserves the answers that, you know, she deserves answers to the questions that she has regarding the disappearance of her brother. So we're seeking out information to help us locate him. I've spoken with many friends, spoke with the family, and everybody I've spoken with is concerned for Mark a great deal, but at this time, we just don't have a lot of information to point us in the direction of where he may have gone. And seeking out the general public's assistance is paramount at this time. We are hoping that a person that might recall Mark, might recall him or visiting with him prior to his disappearance or after his disappearance, to help us out and to come forward to direct the investigation into locating him.
We frequently get questions from listeners, and one of the most common questions is why a state law enforcement agency or the FBI haven't gotten involved in a specific case. While we were speaking to Detective Jansen, we asked him how the Phoenix Police Department works in conjunction with other agencies to help bring their cases to a resolution as quickly as possible.
When I'm assigned a case, what we do is we help out the families and start looking locally. We start, basically, it's kind of like, imagine throwing a rock into a pond and you have that ripple effect. So we start off, if the case, the person was last seen here inside the city of Phoenix, we start off at that last known location. And then from there, we start to work out. And then as we start to gradually work our way out, we'll speak with friends, speak with families, we'll speak with husbands, wives, sisters, brothers, you know, children, and we'll start to gather an overall comprehensive understanding of the person that went, or the missing person. At times, the person can go missing under their own accord, where they could have just, for whatever reason in life, decided just to walk away or step aside from the family and leave. Or there's other cases where we just don't really know where they are at. as it expands, we'll start to seek out the assistance from other agencies or other organizations, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and those outside organizations to help us. Depending on the case, say if it's it involves either a small child or an elderly adult, we always seek out the assistance of social media platforms and traditional media platforms to get the word out right away that we're searching for maybe a person that can't take care of themselves like an older juvenile or an adult or a younger adult can. So Phoenix is a community. We start the investigation here within the Phoenix PD. And then from there, as we need help, we will start to seek the assistance out of from the other agencies. We will seek out the assistance from, say, other agencies, other law enforcement agencies. We will seek out the assistance from Customs and Border Patrol. We will seek out the assistance from FBI, especially when maybe it involves forensic data that needs to be analyzed. Each law enforcement agency, and depending on where it is or who it is, they'll have their own little specialties. We don't want to just give cases to other law enforcement agencies. We will keep our cases and we will work them, but we will work them in collaboration with the other agencies that are willing to assist us. The agencies that we reach out to, we work very well with each other, very well. I know sometimes when you watch TV, someone asked me this question out on the street and they would ask me, how come we just don't give everything right to the FBI? Well, you know, TV is one thing, but the Phoenix Police Department does a really, really, really good job on investigating their own cases or the cases that originate within our jurisdiction. And we take ownership and pride in those cases. And we will work those cases until proper resolution is found, either in this case of missing persons, either we find them in whatever various physical state, or in criminal cases, we'll keep those cases ongoing until a resolution is obtained.
So what happened to Mark Shearer after his friend Tom last saw him on the evening of September 27th, 2016? We know that he kept the drug side of his life somewhat separated from his longtime friends and also his sister Robin. It seems as though this is a real problem with Mark's case. Those who are most motivated to find out what happened to him don't know who he may have been hanging around with. Does Lance know more than he said? Was his disappearance some kind of drug deal gone wrong? Did someone think that Mark had a lot of money in his house? Maybe Mark did have that cash and it was taken. Why was Mark's motorcycle abandoned where it was eventually found? Also, what about the cat being fed and the cat door locked? Would someone harm Mark and then care for his cat? And why was the trunk of his car left open? For Robin, Tom, and Jeff, they're all left wondering about all of these things. At this point in time, the Phoenix Police Department is hoping that someone out there has a tip that could help point them in a new direction with Mark's case. If you have any information about the disappearance of Mark Shearer, please contact the Phoenix Police Department Missing Persons Unit at 602-534-2121 or Detective Christopher Jansen at 602-495-2019. If you would like to remain anonymous, you can call Silent Witness at 480-WITNESS. That's 480-948-6377. You can also submit a tip through their website at silentwitness.org.
I think we've done everything within our right to do to look for Mark. We don't have badges. You know, if we did, we might have been able to get some dogs involved or something, you know. You know, I guess, you know, that wasn't meant to be. I think those ideas were tossed out there. Hey, what if you get a dog to sniff around looking for Mark at that park we went to and that was close to where his motorcycle was found?
We're just, I'm beyond heartbroken and sad because we don't know what happened to him. You know, he was one of those people that he would give you the shirt off his back and everybody just loved him. He was very charismatic. You know, he graduated from NAU and was in the fraternity and just had friends everywhere from Ohio to Phoenix. And his friends from Ohio, from grade school, you know, were calling me and getting in touch with us. One of his girlfriends, who married somebody else, helped us go out and look for him. So, you know, he has friends that just love and adored him, like his family, that we just can't imagine what could have happened to him.
That brings us to the end of episode 155. I'd like to thank Robin, Tom, Jeff, and Detective Jansen for speaking with us for the show. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There's a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at Wondery.com/survey. Join me next week. I'll be covering a case from Texas. Thanks for listening.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid. We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.